This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Russell, and today we have BFM's very own Uma Pagan. I'm K Parkin.
Hey, Cam.
Hello. And this is a very special edition of A Bit of Culture, because we have here, staying at the penthouse suite of Manara A Bit of Culture, one of the founders of A Bit of Culture, flown in by us from Norway, Shifa Situ.
Hello. It's good to be back.
It's great to have you here.
The OG.
It's a bit surreal. Yeah? It's like deja vu.
I mean, younger listeners won't remember who the hell you are, but older listeners will remember Shifa back in the day.
Yes.
It's great to have you.
So, Thank you so much.
I'm so terribly excited, but we're going to move on. So, our topics are this week. Topic number one is monsters. Topic number two, true crime. And topic number three, the end of the world, comma, again. So, Uma, monsters.
That's right. I just happened to watch The Shape of Water, which is Guillermo del Toro's latest movie. It's been nominated for like 13 Academy Awards. And it's kind of a logical progression of all of the work he's done in the past, because he's been constantly fascinated with monsters and creatures and outsiders. He's done Hellboy, he's done movies like Pacific Rim, he did Crimson Peak, which was a gothic love story. He's always kind of had monsters, but the monsters, the physical monsters in his films, often aren't the real monsters in life.
It's the people around.
It's the people around, right? And this movie really made me think about those things, because the movie is set in 1962. And the reason why he said the movie in 1962 was, he said, you know, that was the beginning of the American dream, he said in interviews. And he said, you know, Kennedy hadn't been killed yet, he was just in office, everyone was so excited about this prospect, you know, maybe they were going to the moon and there were TV dinners and all of this stuff. But of course, it was also the time of insane racism and prejudice and Russians and communists and all of this stuff. And I was watching this movie and I'm like, wow, it's set in 1962. And it feels like 2018 is no different. It feels like we have all of these monsters still here. And it's great because it's so much counter-programming, because it's not a cynical movie, right? It's a really hopeful movie. But I can't help but feel depressed, because when I open the newspapers or I open Twitter or Facebook, I feel like very little has changed. And it got me thinking as to how fiction like this can help us deal with the monsters
that still exist.
Yeah, that we deal with every day, right? That we see, whether it's the Harvey Weinsteins of the world or anyone else in our current environment, right? Yeah. And I was wondering if you guys turn to fiction to help you cope with, because I often do, as you know, Cam, you think I escape far too much into fiction, but and superheroes, but it's my escape, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, likewise, I mean, especially in the present last few, this last year, actually, I've been desperately wanting to escape and yet keep getting drawn back to the horrors on the internet.
You did a thing, right? You tried to do a detox.
Yeah, yeah.
Of what media?
Well, I've managed to detox very successfully in terms of local politics, Malaysian politics. I've been very successful on that front. And it's very nice, actually. I kind of do watch the Trumpian disaster unfold with a certain amount of relish, in a way. Because, you know, what monsters are monsters, and the bad guy are the interesting part of the story.
But when you say monsters, what do you mean by that? Like someone who kind of encapsulates all our fears and anxieties, or are you talking about real monsters?
I think a bit of both, right?
Anomalies, right?
Yeah. So what we classify as real monsters are often those creatures that look different from us in any way, right? It could be a fishman, or it could be someone outside our realm of comfort, the outsider from another country who we're not used to, and skin color is different or whatever. We consider them as alien in some way. However, there are, of course, you know, the new monsters, the people who are
in power,
exactly, authority figures, and they abuse and exploit that authority in new ways. So how do we deal with all of these things? And oftentimes when you turn to fiction as an escape, sometimes fiction provides you with the tools to deal with it, but sometimes it is just an escape. But then
you end up being slightly depressed afterwards, because it provides a temporary escape, and it's just a placebo effect.
So I'm curious about this. What is it like in Bergen?
Because
are you bogged down? Because I always feel that when I'm traveling and I'm disconnected from Malaysia, I'm somehow at peace.
I guess every country, every small town has its own monsters. And obviously, I've been away for like 2 years here, and I'm not, you know, not affected at all. Come back and go, oh my God, what? Mahathir is coming back. And, like, nothing's changed. But, you know, surely we
you open the newspapers and you're like, I'm like, is it 1997?
Did I leave? So, yeah, of course, in Bergen, Norway, we have our own monsters and scandals, and you know, everything is relative.
Not everything is perfect in Scandinavia.
No, it's very expensive, you know.
But you know, I'm thinking back to when I was younger and the monsters, trying to compare and contrast the monsters back then.
Yeah,
the monsters you're talking about are very much metaphorical monsters.
Correct.
Whereas I think,
well, I mean, there are real monsters. I mean, there are pedophiles and all these creatures out there as well who are real monsters,
well,
right?
I'm just thinking in terms of the movies and such. We were entertained with actual monsters. I mean, you know, actual fictional monsters. You know, be it like Alien,
right,
or The Thing. And I wonder if, maybe that was a product just being that age, but I wonder if the metaphorical monster has sort of like taken over from the actual scary monsters, you know? Do we have a cast of characters like Alien anymore being created?
They keep bringing back the old
ones.
They're
all those sequels, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
which have kind of lost their impact, right?
I mean, yeah, we're not really, there's not like a new monstrous monster.
Unless it's like technology as this
unknown
force.
That's right, yeah. Technology is the ultimate monster, isn't it?
But also we use metaphorical monsters because we need that escape, right? We use metaphor as an escape because sometimes we feel we can't deal with the problem head on.
Mm.
And so the metaphor is utilized by us because it's a coping mechanism.
Yeah, you allow it to play out.
Correct.
And take its, you know,
to the logical
conclusion.
Yeah, exactly.
And, mm-hmm. and then you survive because you just walk out of the cinema and continue.
But just to wrap up, though, I haven't seen the film. You have, The Shape of Water, Uma. The monster is...
it's like some sea creature.
So the monster, as in the physical manifestation of the monster, is this fish man, is this sea creature played by Doug Jones. He's magic. And it is not a computer-generated creature. It is a man in a suit, and it's done very, very well. However, the monster is everything else. The monster is racism in America, and the monster is Michael Shannon's character, this guy called Strickland, who isn't a bad guy. He's just got these firm beliefs that he stands by as to what it means to be American and a man of God. And he doesn't believe he's the bad guy. He believes he's right. And that makes him almost even a bigger monster.
I say, it sounds almost Spielbergian.
But,
you know, like
Del Toro is, right? Yeah.
E.T. is not the monster. But it's the forces trying to hunt down E.T. that are
correct.
Monstrous.
Exactly.
And also they're trying to destroy the family. Would you recommend the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's pristine.
I watched like half of it.
I can't believe you watched half of it.
No,
and
I had
stopped.
To go and do something else. It wasn't because I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah?
I was just confused because the lady in it, like she's mute. But I thought she was deaf initially, and I was like, why does she understand what people are saying?
That will be explained later.
Oh, yes. you left too soon.
So but start again from the beginning.
Okay.
You've got to watch it in its entirety. It is pristine. It is beautiful.
Right. Okay. We're going to move on to topic number two, which is Shifa's first topic in about 3 years.
Woo! Oh my God.
Are you ready?
Work.
True crime, Shifa.
Yes. Well, because I've been in Norway and I've started an ice cream shop, my day-to-day life is basically making ice cream, which is kind of monotonous, repetitive, manual labor.
I don't know, it sounds like magic.
It is magic. But you kind of get into the zen of making ice cream. And what I love to do is listen to podcasts. And I've been listening to, you know, binge listening to so many podcast, and we are kind of experiencing a massive like podcast mania at the moment. I think there's something like 400,000 podcasts.
Wow.
individual program type.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, and covering a plethora of topics and subjects. But I've been really sucked in to the true crime kind of genre. I mean, we all heard. I mean, listen to Serial,
yes,
and S Town, which kind of set the benchmark. You haven't?
I don't know, Esther. No.
You must.
So these are the, you know, This American Life people who've kind of done really investigative, sort of character-driven stories.
Criminal.
But the one that I've been pretty obsessed with is called My Favorite Murder.
Oh.
And it's two ladies from L.A. Like, one's a comedy writer. The other has done, like, some food shows. And each week they come together and they tell each other their favorite murder. And not favorite as in they love murder, but favorite as in, oh my God, this is so insane, I can't wait to tell you about it. And I think, again, you talked about, you know, the monsters in our midst, and it's this need to kind of talk through and kind of examine these fears and anxieties we have in a crazy, crazy world. And this has spawned, like, it's become a real cult following. They have sellout shows. All the fans, they call themselves murderinos. Mm-hmm. And they create, like, crazy fan art. And they even tattoo themselves with the initials SSGDM, which stands for Stay Sexy and Don't Get Murdered, which is their tagline.
Wow.
That is great.
Yeah. So, Shifa, why are you, you know, a sane person and very, you know, placid person drawn to these horrific stories?
I mean, I think, aren't we all?
Aren't we all?
Perhaps, you know, I think we always have been. You know, there's the sort of morbid fascination with the other.
Yeah.
But then there's also the fact that so much of it is very, you know, you have the extreme sort of serial killers, psychopath types, mm-hmm. you know, which is interesting. But I find more interesting the kind of, you know, garden variety.
Domestic
mm-hmm. you know, people who just snap or...
But you know, the thing is, I think that there's a direct ratio to be drawn between the actual genuine statistical safety of a particular land and the amount of murder mysteries that they create. So Britain is actually a very safe place to live.
Right.
But, you know, Agatha Christie alone has written like a trillion. and then there's, you know, there's on top of that, there's Sherlock Holmes and then, well, you name it. There are so many of them. And people are absolutely absorbed by this because murder will never actually ever enter their lives. If it would.
Hopefully.
Well, statistically, it's very unlikely.
Yes. Yeah.
And if it did, then people wouldn't be interested in watching it anymore.
No, it's something you would not be interested in if it happened to someone, you know, close to you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, in evolutionary terms, there's much less murder happening amongst the human race than it used to.
Yeah, and I'd imagine Bergen's probably quite a safe place.
Yes.
I mean, there you are, stirring your ice cream, and there's very little chance of suddenly someone leaping out and stabbing you to death.
I hope so.
Because, yeah.
But now you're scaring her.
but it's not the leaping out of the dark kind of murder that scares me. I mean, not that, right. You know, it's more...
A family member suddenly needs money.
Yeah,
and claims the insurance. I mean, it's a global phenomenon. That's why we have a dozen murder mystery shows on TV at any one time. That's why there are like 7 CSI spin-offs and Law and Order spin-offs, right? Because I think there's something about the mystery of the unsolved crime.
Mm.
I mean, I can't help but read or click on any link that has to do with Jack the Ripper. I mean, even if it's a book, even if it's some fictional retelling of the Jack the Ripper story, I'm just like, ooh.
Well, you know, I think I've mentioned this before. You know, Jack the Ripper, I've been doing a lot of research on that particular era, and I discovered when reading the newspapers of that time that actually Jack the Ripper story was not really a very big story at the time.
Right.
People were much more interested in the actual genuine possibility of a breakdown in society with these marching strikers.
Mm.
And so... upper and middle class society was terrified that they were going to take over.
So it was a diversion strategy.
Well, no, in a way, it was just the Jack the Ripper story was like, well, what can you expect of these working class people? And it was, so there was sort of titillation, but there was no fear. I mean, there was fear.
Unless he actually lived in Whitechapel.
Well, yeah.
But there was, and he was killing prostitutes, mostly, right?
They were Irish as well. Mm. In fact, the first victim was Swedish. He never actually killed any English people.
Ooh.
So... it was titillation, but in later years, as time has gone by, then it's become Jack the Ripper, the myth.
Well, because it's just rife with mystery, right? Because you don't know who he is, you don't know. So, I mean, it's perfect for exploitation.
I think time has allowed us to,
of course,
to lose any sense of fear about Jack the Ripper, and now it's just just sort of titillation and mystery.
Yeah, but that's what I want. I want titillation and mystery.
You also want to be frightened.
I do want to be scared. Exactly.
In a safe environment.
No, but that's why when you're making ice cream and listening to a podcast, that you feel so disconnected from the actual murder.
Yes.
So do they do unsolved murders or do they any kind of murder?
They tend to do murders that they know who did it. But there's another podcast called Someone Knows Something. There's a Canadian journalist and they're all sort of cold cases. And he'll go and look at like... or the disappearance of a 4-year-old boy in 1973.
Mm.
And he, you know, really like spends time with the family and follows new clues. And sometimes there are like you know, things will come out of these discoveries that actually opens up the case again and like, continues after the podcast has ended.
I also love this kind of thing. And I wonder, though, whilst you've been stirring your ice cream, how many people do you think have died in your ears?
The body count is like, I can't keep track. It's been hundreds. Okay. The thing is, at the end, you don't even remember them. Like, it's just like murder, 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 and ice cream.
What was the one called again? The LA one?
My Favorite Murder.
My Favorite Murder.
I'm going to look that up.
Jeff, check it out. Yeah. Because I'm a bit of a rut with my podcast.
And you need to check out S-Town.
S-Town.
It's a limited series. It all kind of wraps up in 6 episodes, am I right? Something like that. But it's one story that's told over an arc. And they released all the episodes at the same time, Netflix style, so you could like binge it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
S-Town, I'm fairly certain I bought their first album. Okay, so in a moment we shall return with topic number 3 here on A Bit of Culture with Shifa Situ on BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Uma Paganampake Parkin, but forget about us, Shifa Situ.
Well, hey.
Yeah. And so now topic number 3, which I think all our topics are very connected this week, because with my sense of excitement that Shifa was coming back, I thought I want to do something Norwegian to prepare myself. So I watched...
Don't typecast me.
Well, no, yeah. So I watched Thor Ragnarok.
It's the perfect Norwegian movie.
That's right. As I was watching it, I had this strange feeling, the same feeling I felt when I watched the recent Justice League movie. And I realized that what it was is I have watched this movie 100 times because it's the end of the world is going to happen because of some monstrous thing, one of Uma's monsters. And at the last moment, a gang of people will save us. Thanks to something that was mentioned in the first 10 minutes, the positronic ray, and we're saved. And I was just thinking, how many times have I seen the end of the world about to happen in the movies? And with the growth of the superheroes,
yep.
How many more times am I going to see the end of the world?
But isn't it
every month until you die?
Like, are there just essentially like 5 stories in the world anyway?
Sure. But I think there are ways to slice and dice things. I mean, perhaps The Godfather is the same as Hamlet, which might even be the same as The Blue Lagoon. I don't know, but they're so different enough. But whereas if the premise is always the ultimate jeopardy, the end of the world, and the world must be saved, it's such a predictable loop. I'm looking at you, Uma Parkin, because
yes. I didn't make it.
No, because you're such a fan of this.
No, I am. But hold on. You know, I mean, it's like, how many times have we seen the Romeo and Juliet story? We've seen it over and over and over again. I mean, it goes back to what Shifa says, right? Yeah, there are limited numbers of stories, but I guess it's in the execution. So, you know, with Thor, it wasn't necessarily a movie that focused on that plot point of the end of the world. It was a workplace comedy, essentially.
But were
right?
you looking forward to seeing the end of the world?
No, of course not. But it's just that I'm on the same train track again.
You are. But
is as tedious as sitting in as a traffic jam on my commute.
But isn't the journey an exciting one if it makes you laugh a little, cry a little? You know, it doesn't matter what that ending is. It doesn't matter if Asgard gets blown up, right?
It just stimulates your brain a little bit.
It's supposed to be that in itself. I mean, the superhero movie, at the end of the day, should be pure escapist entertainment. I mean, it's not supposed
Hulk,
to...
smash.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I couldn't help but remember the director... I forgot his name. Taika Waititi's earlier film,
What We Do in the Shadows.
I have not seen that one, but
Hunt
for the Wilder People, and that was a movie which was, yes, maybe I've seen that many times before, hunting down people who have fallen outside the law. But the execution there, because I think there was room for it as well, because they live in the real world.
Yeah. Yes,
it has to kind of connect to the real world in some way, even though it's escapism. It has to talk to or speak to our times in some way, or like tap into some kind of current fear.
Well, maybe Thor and Loki tap into your sense of the real world as a Norwegian. I don't know.
Historically accurate.
And maybe Ragnarok is, I don't know, 30 miles outside Bergen. But for me, it was just...
You were suffering from superhero fatigue.
Absolutely. Mm. And also the plot points, the same damn plot points, where, you know... At the beginning, they show the potential of the threat, Usually it involves the destruction of Paris for some reason. I don't know why Paris gets it in the neck, London. And this is very much a post 9/11 thing. But one movie.
Because that taps into your greatest fear, right, if you're an American.
Yeah, but one movie that did actually shock me, which is in this genre, was directed by a German, and that was 2012.
Really?
Yeah, because what he did in that movie was you saw him destroy Los Angeles.
Yes.
And you saw him destroy Las Vegas. He was happy to destroy America. And I hadn't seen that. Because normally they choose sacrificial lambs from another place.
Well, they always destroy New York, though.
Yes.
You know, New York seems to be the kind of, you know, Independence Day.
They damage New York. They damage it.
They blew up the White House. They obliterated Washington.
Again, that's a German film director.
It's Roland Emmerich's movies, right? With Independence Day and stuff.
So,
correct.
He's an outsider who's prepared to do that. Mm. And so if it was like the image of seeing Los Angeles disappear before my very eyes was actually quite shocking, and I rather enjoyed
it. You felt
that.
It.
I did. But you, Uma, are happy to be. You're going to get this now for the next 20 years. There's no more Godfather Part 2.
No, there isn't.
There's just Wonder Woman.
There isn't. There are interesting movies like The Shape of Water. There are interesting movies like Battle of the Sexes and Darkest Hour. There are all these small movies that do exist. But the problem is the superhero movie kind of sucks all the oxygen out because the marketing and hype machine.
Doesn't it?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
There's a lack of originality that at some point, even you, Uma, you're
not tired of it. Oh, no. I might get tired of it. I don't know because I think, there's 80 years of content to kind of tap into with superhero comic books, right? However, the superhero movie is a unique beast because it is a combination of both art and commerce like we've never seen before. And I think that's why it's so interesting because when you make a movie like Thor, when you give it to Taika Waititi, who's this crazy indie director with a weird sense of humor, you can only allow him to do his thing to a certain extent. Because then commerce kicks in. Mm. And when I was watching Thor Ragnarok and having seen his previous movies, I love him as a director. I mean, I love his comedic vision. And I'm watching it and I'm like, wow, you let him get away with quite a bit for a $200 million movie that you need to have it make $1.2 billion, right? You know? And so that's why I find reviewing superhero movies and all that stuff really, really interesting because you can't just talk about the art anymore. Mm. And you're right, Shifa. I mean, there will come a point when I would be like, come on, you've been doing this for 10 years now. Break some rules.
Yeah,
right?
Where's the movie about Superman having to face up with his alcoholism?
Exactly.
You know,
because they've done stuff like that in the comic books.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. The superhero movie in its current form hasn't been around for very long. It just feels that way.
And I'm because it's exhausted.
Yeah, exactly. It feels
exhausted.
That way because it sucked the oxygen out of the room, right?
So I want to ask then, the amount of times that we've watched the world be destroyed, what does that do to us? Perhaps there was a time when people first read H.G. Wells' The War of the Worlds, which was the first time that a non-god destroyed the world. People were very shocked. But his book was about the breakdown of society more than it was the monsters, who were eventually, spoiler alert, killed by a virus.
Yeah.
How many times have they reused the damn thing?
Okay, so here's the thing. Isn't it supposed to fill us with a sense of hope? Because at the end of all of these movies and all of these works of fiction, there is always a flicker, a spark of hope, right? Whether it's the last remnants of humanity rising up and rebuilding or something like that.
Oh. But only to, eventually destroy themselves again.
Correct. So
yeah,
for
until
me,
the next episode. Mm.
Well, for me, an interesting counter to this was the latest Planet of the Apes movie, War for the Planet of the Apes, right? And it was very fascinating because this was one movie where humanity was awful. There was not a single thread of redemption in humanity, and you're watching this movie and you're rooting for these apes to wipe us out because we are pointless. Mm-hmm. And essentially, spoiler alert, I mean, you know this from Planet of the Apes, but that's what happens, right? The apes win and they set up civilization. And of course, you don't know if they'll go down the same path because maybe it's our nature as creatures of this world
to dominate,
to turn on each other, to do all the nasty things, to exploit our environment until we burn it to the ground, maybe, right?
Which is actually a very real prospect now, isn't it?
Yes. And so
the end of the world is when the end of the world happens.
Exactly.
For us.
Exactly, for us, right? Yes. As human beings. So War for the Planet of the Apes was the end of the world for us, but life went on, only with talking apes.
Yeah?
Yeah. So that's a very different take on it. And it's not a hopeful movie unless you like monkeys.
But they were tied yes, but they were tied down to the original, absolutely fantastic Charlton Heston Planet of the Apes.
Of course.
With the iconic moment at the end where, spoiler alert, he finds the Statue of Liberty half submerged and he discovers that he was on planet Earth the whole time.
You damn dirty apes!
Yeah, you only went and did it! And, and they couldn't escape it. If they'd had a chance, I'm sure they'd have a completely different storyline. But anyway, okay, well, Mr. Hopey Changey. For me, I feel like I've had enough. But sure, when I'm standing there next time in the cinema and I've got my popcorn in one hand, I've got a choice between Thor versus,
17.
Thor 17 and the hope of Changey water, I'm probably going to go watch Thor 17. Right, well, that's what it is. So now we move on, though, to recommendations, where we recommend something that we think might be of interest. And Uma's going first.
Am I going first? All right. I am going to recommend a movie that is currently playing in cinemas. It's called Battle of the Sexes. It's been out in America for a while, but it just got released in Malaysia. And of course, it tells the very famous story of the tennis match between Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs.
Oh, yeah, I watched the documentary.
Right? Okay, so it's very similar to the documentary. This is just kind of like a dramatization of it.
And who plays the...
Emma Stone as Billie Jean King. And Steve Carell as Bobby Riggs. Phenomenal job. But what I love most about it is, yet again, it goes back to this idea that somehow all of these movies are set in the past. And I know they were written a long time ago. Like, these screenplays must have been ready for a while. Mm. But yet, in the era of Brexit and Donald Trump, somehow we see all of these movies with a new lens. And for me, this was a great film because there it was, talking about gender politics and... gay rights and all of these things. And essentially, it's like this message to America going, oi, we fought so long and hard to get here in 2018. Don't mess it up.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of young people and morons on Twitter, stupid Nazis, are often just like mouthing off, right? And I'm just like, do you have no sense of history? And I think you need popular culture historical
reminders.
Bits like this, like reminders to tell people, hey, things were a lot worse back then. I mean, it's not just gay rights. I mean, you watch that, you've seen it, right, Cam?
Yeah.
I mean, the male chauvinism in that movie is extreme. Like, Bobby Riggs was... but Bobby Riggs was, like, playing a part, right? Because he was just manipulating the media because he wants the circus. But he... His impact, like the real people who went to the game carrying posters going, I'm a male chauvinist.
Mm.
Oof, God knows what impact it had on, like, society.
Mm. I watched the film. I really enjoyed it. I can't think why, but ever since I was young, I've always really admired Billie Jean King.
Oh, she's amazing.
And getting back to the superhero nonsense, I mean, what she does with the tennis racket is far more entertaining and interesting than what Thor does with his hammer.
Fine, I'll give you that.
Right? But there was one moment in that movie which was actually not accurate, where the ratio of money that the male players earned to women was in the movie 8-1. It was actually 15-1.
Oh, wow.
I don't know why they halved it. But it, no, it's really good.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Go watch it, people. You'll learn something.
Yeah. You should watch it.
Yes, I will. I will.
Yeah.
And so, Shifa, you're next.
Okay. I'm going to recommend a podcast.
Yay.
It's true crime. It's called Dirty John. This is created by the LA Times writer Christopher Gofford. He's like a Pulitzer Prize winner, investigative journalist. And it tells a story of a very successful middle-aged woman who meets this seemingly perfect man online. And the story kind of unfolds and it's very well told. It kind of plays like a thriller, like a noir, but it's rooted in this like serious investigations and facts. And the first episode, and again, it's like 6 episodes that's released in one shot. On one story. And the first episode, it just begins with someone reading out the autopsy report of a body that's like mangled with 13 stab wounds. And you don't know who the body is, how it happened. And then it goes like rewinds back into this innocent lady trying to meet Mr. Right, and it just unfolds from there.
You know, there is a theory that your emotion as you're cooking actually influences the flavor of the food.
It's killer ice cream.
Yes, your ice cream. I wonder what it tastes like. A little bit frightened.
Yeah, I've heard Dirty John. There are also companion pieces
in the
LA Times, yes. Right?
So it's Print and
Podcast. It's amazing. Mm.
Wow.
Yeah.
I must check it out.
That's a good one. I think you'd like that one.
Yeah, I like this kind of thing. As I say, I'm a bit of a rut in my podcast.
It's very of the times again. You're talking about like misogyny and, you know, toxic masculinity and stuff.
Because the story was, it's set, the time-wise.
It's pretty current, like probably like 90s onwards.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Dirty John. Okay. So my recommendation is, I'm sorry to typecast you, Shifa, as our Norwegian person. So I wanted to try and find something Norwegian.
Thank you.
So I was thinking, okay, there's Aha. There's there's Anna Fried, the brunette in ABBA. And
isn't she Swedish?
No, she's actually Norwegian.
Oh.
You didn't know that. Actually, no, she's a proud sister of Norway. And then there's also one of my favorite artists, Edvard Munch. But then I thought, no, I want to recommend, if let's say you ever find yourself traveling to Norway, and to the fine city of Bergen, also known as the Moir of the North.
What of the
You've done your research, Cameron.
No, I think it's more like the Ipoh of the North. And and you might want to go to a cafe, stroke ice cream parlor, there by the name of Hallesen.
Hallesen.
Ooh.
And where you can get, for instance, salted Gula Melaka ice cream,
but
they don't call it that. They call it
we're calling it like salty tropical caramel.
Oh, I like it.
Yes, you can't say palm anything in Norway.
No, you can't.
Freak out.
Exactly.
And so, you know, I intend to one day, if I can raise the funds, go visit.
Lead by example, Cam. Come visit.
Yeah. Okay. We'll do. And so once more, it's to my recommendation: go visit a ice cream parlor called
Hallesen.
Okay.
Thanks for the plug.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, but you're not making it easy for people, right? They can go to the cinema and watch my recommendation.
No, I mean, sure, we're broadcasting to Malaysians, but our podcast is available around the world. We have a huge Scandinavian audience.
We do.
And so there'll be queues around the block. okay, so that brings us to the end of this week's show. Only remains for me now to thank special honored returnee Shifa Situ.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you back. And Umapagan PK Parkin.
Always a pleasure, Cam.
With myself, Cam Raslan. If you'd like to, I mentioned just now, you can download our podcasts and you can listen to them while making your own food
ice cream.
Yeah. And obviously, Shifa, whilst you're in Norway, you've been downloading us.
Of course.
And please also like our Facebook page.
How many likes have you got now?
And that brings us to the end of the thousands. Okay? That's all you need to know. And so thank you. And please join us next week for another exciting episode of A Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Yay.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.